That's all discomfort. Really, when I think about that, it boils down to everyone's personal resilience level with each of the different types of ways that you can be uncomfortable or pressured. And so pain is a type of discomfort or pressure. And so different people have different tolerance levels.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. I've brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted.
Thank you for joining us here on the Autoimmune Hour with Sharon Saylor. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio. And we don't want you to worry about taking too many notes, so you can join the Autoimmune Hour's Courage Club, and we'll send you the transcripts and show notes from every episode. Sign up now at understandingautoimmune.com. Now, back to your host, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And tonight, I've got a great new episode. I'm so fascinated by this topic. When I got an email from Dr. Sandra Dalton-Smith, she's a board-certified internal medicine physician with an active practice in Birmingham, Alabama. The headline got me. Do you know there are 7 types of rest? Literally, I was thinking like 7 ways to sleep. That's not what she has to say. And what she has to say is so fascinating to me. I'm all on board with it. And I wanted I have to share it with you because it's so great. So welcome, Dr. Sandra. Thanks for being on the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, the 7 types of rest. When I read that headline from you, I was like thinking, okay, 7 ways to sleep, like power napping, you know, real sleep, whatever. And you have that there are 7 ways that I won't even say our body, because that's not fair. Our being has to rest, feel completely revived and optimized. So let's jump right in, because I want to make sure we have time to cover all 7. I'll tell you the one I was most surprised about, and that's the one that you said, sensory. And then I was also really surprised by creative. So we can jump with either of those, because I was like, sensory.
Yes. Well, I'll quickly kind of just name the 7, just to kind of have them all out there, that we can kind of go into those 2. So the 7 different types are the physical, mental, emotional, social, sensory, and creative. And so with the sensory, the main thing that we're looking at is, what is it that we're doing throughout our day that causes us to use our senses? And then to being very intentional about taking some time to downgrade those sensory inputs. So for many of us, that time, you know, really boils down to how much of our electronics are we using?
Because I was going to say that screen time.
Yeah, that's the main thing that's really keeping us sensorily overloaded. That, and as well as lights and, you know, the sounds that we have. Many of us, our notifications are a huge part of it. How many notifications we have set either on our computer or on our cell phone devices also adds to that sensory overload.
I have a quick question about sensory. I've got a pair and I wear them most often. I don't wear them for interviews because the yellow lenses kind of make me look slightly jaundiced around the eyes, you know, just the color. Do those sorts of things help?
Absolutely. I think anything that helps to decrease the amount of sensory input that you're receiving. So as you mentioned, some of those blue light reflecting type glasses, also just making sure that even on your own computers and devices, that you're mindful that you can turn down the brightness of the screens. And even some systems have ways of setting that so that at a certain time of day, your computer screen or your phone or iPad automatically starts kind of turning down the brightness of the screen to prevent excessive amounts of light exposure unnecessarily.
Yeah, my computer has that. And I'll tell you, the first couple of times it happened, I had to, oh, okay. I was like, all of a sudden, what's wrong with my computer? And then I reminded myself, oh, it's that time of day. So I love them.
It's a good thing.
Yeah, it is. But when you first start playing with it, you're like, what just happened to my screen? Now, I'm curious about sensory. I hear about it. I don't know a lot about it other than I do know some of my friends are very scared of something they call EMFs from like their screens and things like that. Mm-hmm. Is that part of sensory overload and is that real?
It's a part of it just because of the light exposure. You know, some people mention just having your phone near your bed or have your alarm clock or something like that in the same room with you can affect your sleep and can affect your ability to sleep. For many people, it just adds to the sensory overload. They already are sensory overloaded before any of those additional inputs come into play. So if you're someone who uses your computer all day or spends a lot of time doing social media or things where you're constantly kind of bombarded by the sensory input, then having your light on by your bed or having a bright red, you know, flashing light for your alarm clock on at your bed could add to your inability to sleep well. Not simply because of kind of the unknowns out there, but because of the lack of sensory rest. You're not actually allowing your senses to have time to downgrade. And for many of us, silence and darkness are something that we don't spend a lot of time appreciating.
Oh, absolutely. And you're making me think about that little red dot. Recently, I saw these little, I was like, really? I don't know if I'd pay for them, but these little things you could buy that you actually stuck on those little dots to make them go away. I was like, I think I could just put a post-it note there, but you know, why would I pay for that?
It's unusual when you think about, you know, when you're sleeping, because the, just like we talked about, your computer screen has brightness levels. Most people don't think about the fact that their alarm clocks have brightness levels. So the redness or blueness, whatever color is it is, the numbers, usually you can dim those some. And so it's a manual thing. It doesn't usually automatically happen like your computer. You have to manually dim the lights on those. But we need to be aware of that because that could be part of the reason why someone's not sleeping well, if they're having that kind of glare from that light all night long in front of their face.
Okay. So now those to me are easily fixable. But what about us who have to work on our computer for hours at a time? Are there things we can do besides the tinted lenses to minimize the overload so we can get through just our regular day?
Yeah, part of that would be to adjust the notifications. For example, if you're using your computer, think about doing something called time blocking with your emails so that you're not constantly going in and out of the emails all day long. You can have your notifications off for your email and then time block certain periods of the day that you will purposely go into your email and check it instead of every time you're busy working, have that little ding go off where then you spike your cortisol levels and kind of get your fight or flight kicked in just because of the unnecessary notifications. Same with social media on our computers or on our phones, to turn those off, particularly on our phones, to only have those notifications that are truly emergencies. So the text messaging, the actual phone component of it, and that's really about it for most people. You may want to have your calendar as a notification if you are doing a lot of things that require you to stay on a particular schedule. But then other than that, trying to limit the use of those notifications.
Oh, not only do I limit the use of the notifications, I don't have a lot of the social medias on my phone. It's just like the phone does go everywhere with me, but the idea of like, no, I really don't need to know about the latest pie recipe right away. Just don't.
And that's it. Not right away. It's not an emergency. You don't have to know it in the moment. I mean, you may want to know it later, but you can go in there and check it whenever you want to.
Well, I think now I understand sensory. A lot of us understand it. The idea, I think, I want to jump ahead. We talked about creative, but I want to jump ahead because a little bit, I will get back to creative, everyone, but I want to talk because when you said some of the things, I could see myself when I did take the phones out of the room at night, things like that. But I could see some emotional components kicking in of Like, can I really turn off, not look at my email and turn off that ding and be okay? A lot of people, you know what I say? A lot of people almost get addicted to that ding.
Yeah, I think we are. For a majority of us, we've gotten kind of this quick gratification of knowing that we can kind of check social media or get the likes and all these different things that are in the moment. But it really adds just to the over, as you mentioned, kind of the overall stress that a lot of people are feeling. There's a pressure associated with answering it quickly. And that's the
emotional component. The component. I know when you describe emotional, it's about expressing our feelings and eliminating sort of people pleasing behaviors and learning to say no. But I also, as you're talking about that, like, ooh, I think there's an emotional component of just learning to say no, I don't have to answer that email right away.
So true. So true. And you're right. Emotional rest really boils down to just being able to be very open and honest about what's going on in your life. So that includes having healthy boundaries and being able to say no and to choose how you want to spend your time.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes that's tough nowadays with the pandemic, with homeschooling children and working from home. It's like some of our down, well, it's not like, our downtime has merged with our professional life in a lot of cases. It's easy to keep working that extra bit of time just to finish it up. Instead, we're not clocking out like we used to.
And we need to. We really have to get those that work-life integration component down. That's the majority of where I spend my time now with people, is looking at the work-life integration part, because as you mentioned, right now, it's all kind of the same thing. Our working life and our home life have kind of merged into the same location. And so it's even more important now to have some boundaries around your work schedule. So if majority of your work is done, let's say on your cell phone, but in the evening, everyone in your family is basically home, then put the cell phone away. There's no need, there's no emergencies if everybody's under the roof. So there's no need to be concerned if something's going on, you know, outside of that family unit at the time. Take the phone away, take the temptation away, whether it's the phone or the laptop, and spend some time away from it if that's where you're doing all of your work.
Sometimes I miss a traditional old phone I grew up with that only ringed, you know, didn't do anything. But if there was an emergency, it would ring and you're like, okay, it must be important. But I didn't have all this other stuff that distracts me, like even just reading the news. It's so easy just to sit there and listen to television, ignore your family, and scroll your phone all at the same time. Which I imagine isn't very restful, even though some people say, oh, well, you know, I unwind doing that. But are you really unwinding doing that?
Well, I think that's the thing. There's a difference between kind of unwinding, or as I call escapism, and resting. Resting is actually restorative. So if you're resting, then there should be some type of restorative process happening in one of these seven areas that I mentioned. And so sitting and watching, like many people will say on the weekends, I'm going to rest on the weekend, and they sit and they watch, you know, 5 or 6 hours worth of Netflix. Is that resting? Well, not normally, because most people, when they get up from that time, they don't feel any better. Nothing changed. They're not restored in any of those seven areas. Did they escape life for a period of time and have some entertainment that entertained them? Yes. Did they rest? Not so much.
Oh, that's a good distinction, because I do know a lot of people, and I've been guilty of it too, of like, I'm just going to binge watch today. That's it. I might binge watch from my bed and think I'm resting.
Most people, when they're done with that, if anything, they feel worse. Their body's tight and tense from having been in the same position for so long. Their mind's racing from whatever shows that they've been watching. They don't physically feel any more rested or truly at a point of feeling energized or restored from that activity.
So true. Which makes me, I'm jumping all around here, everyone, sorry about this, because I'm just going where my thoughts are, which makes me think about the physical part. Is a lot of times I feel better and more rested if I go for a vigorous walk. Mm-hmm. And you would think, well, I would think anyway, you know, oh, I expended all this energy. I just walked 2.5 miles, and but actually I feel very rested and comfortable when I'm done with the walk, as long as I haven't like overdone it, but you know what I mean.
And that's exactly what physical rest is. You know, physical rest has two components. It has the passive, which is the sleeping and the napping that we're all familiar with when we think about the word rest. And then it has the active components of physical rest, which include things like leisure walks, or yoga or stretching, really anything that improves the lymphatics and the circulation. So we're not talking about, you know, going for a jog where you're actually increasing your stress response because you're pushing your body kind of to a limit. We're talking about that kind of slow, peaceful, you're just keeping everything moving and the joints are flowing well. And it's really just a restorative process, because in that exchange of where you're pumping the blood and you're getting the lymphatics moving and the muscles are relaxing, you're allowing your body to kind of go back to a calm state. And so if you're physically active, but you're resting in the process. And I think that's the mindset shift that so many people have to make. We think of rest and we automatically think of the cessation of activity. We think of stopping. Mm-hmm. And really rest is about restorative activities. Now that can include stopping, like sleeping or silence where you're just kind of being still, but it can also include things like, as you mentioned, a leisure walk.
Oh, absolutely. I love walking. Well, I live in a grove of old oak trees. I love walking around the trees. It's just very, I always thought it was the trees, but I guess it's also my lymphatic system.
And the trees are probably playing a part of it too. You know, you mentioned about creative rest. And that is what creative rest is. It's the rest we experience when we allow ourselves to appreciate beauty in whatever form, whether that's natural beauty like the trees or the ocean or lakes or anything like that, or man-made beauty like art museums or music or the theater, anything that you kind of allow the awe and the wonder of that to awaken something inside of you.
And well, that's all to me is external. I was thinking about just this last weekend, I did some craft projects with my grandkids, and that was restful in a strange way too. I mean, you're busy with little ones, of course, but I felt so rejuvenated and happy. I was just really happy. Everything turned out really cute for the Halloween and everything like that. It was just wonderful. I was excited. And so doing the creative, not as just the visual part, like or going and exploring part, but actually doing something like, oh, I can be creative too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's always wonderful. Great to be around people that you just enjoy kind of spending time with, because that is a component of that social rest part. You know, having time to be with the people who you enjoy, and there's positive energy in those relationships. So that is a form of rest as well. Just time spent with life-giving people who help you to feel more rejuvenated.
Yes, we all need lots of those in our world right now. I want to take a quick commercial break on that. And when we come back, we're going to talk some more about rest. I just find this so fascinating because it's, Dr. Sandra, you're just blowing my mind and shifting the way I ever thought about rest. Like I said in the opening, I thought it was just sleep or napping. So we'll be right back.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living. A chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times. co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour. Maybe you don't know I'm also an author. My latest book is for kids. It's Pinky Chenille and the Rainbow Hunters, a winner of a 5-star reader's favorite review. It's perfect for your early reader and a great bedtime story for your young adventurers. Check it out over at pinkychenille.com. That's PINKYCHENILLE.com. See you there. Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com, and tonight I'm here with Dr. Sandra Dalton-Smith. She's a board-certified internal medicine physician and has an active practice near Birmingham, Alabama. And we're talking about her 7 types of rest, and I'm absolutely fascinated by these because when I read them, I was deficit in all 7. Anyway, I guess according to Dr. Sandra, that's not uncommon. So we've been talking about how it can affect your well-being as well. And so, Dr. Sandra, tell us a little bit more of what, as you were writing your book, of course, the title of your book, share with us about your book, and then we'll jump right into what some other things that you learned.
Sure. The title of the book is Sacred Rest: Recover Your Life, Renew Your Energy, Restore Your Sanity. And basically, it's through what I ended up having to do to get myself from a place of burnout about 10 years ago.
I love that restore your sanity part. I think we're all looking forward to that part of this. And so, and as we were discussing these different aspects of it, we left it with the social part. What are some tips you have? Like, say you've got both kinds in your life, the rejuvenative and maybe the toxic. And what are some tips that you have for people who say, gosh, you know, all of these over here are great, and then there's this one that just seems to be sucking all my time? It's funny how, have you ever noticed that sometimes people ignore their best relationships and there's one that just sucks everything, like a toxic spider?
Always. It's the really how people think about their relationships in the term of, are they negatively pulling energy from you, or are they positively pouring energy back into you? Because the reality is most of our relationship are those that are negatively pulling energy from us. It's the people who need us. It's our coworkers and our clients and our family and our spouses. So they're the people who are always requiring something of you. And those people are always going to feel more demanding because they need something. They're going to be coming to you with requests. Whereas those other people who are maybe just adult friends, just people you enjoy being around, are not going to put as many demands on you. So you have to be very intentional about time spent with those people. And the research shows that most adults have fewer adult friends now than ever, even before COVID. In general, our lifestyles didn't allow space beyond family and career. And so that creates this social rest deficit that many of us try to fill up with social media. And unfortunately, those relationships don't have the same social rest benefit because you lose the power of presence. Most of those interactions are without seeing someone, so you can't hear their voice inflection, you can't see their facial expressions, their body movements, all of those things that add to the energy that you experience when you're with someone. And so that's why it's so easy to have disagreements online, because you don't have that added benefit.
Right, absolutely. And I was also thinking of this strange word on certain social media, like you have 5,000 friends. I'm like, of which, you know what, 20?
Right.
This idea of mixing that name, that word, that label in our mind that, oh, wow, 5,000 friends, of which I know 20 and probably three I speak to with some regularity, if I'm lucky. I'm surprised. There are certain people in my world that I'm surprised. Have you ever met the ones, there's always certain ones that, and I'm saying I'm one of those, that reach out to the friends and others, I don't know, it's just weird. There's certain people that I love being around, but sometimes you got to go like knock on their door every so often. But that's really cool. But you know what is surprising and sad to me is, like you said, how many people have lose touch with even their closest friends. And that to me, that was even happening before COVID. That was even happening before the pandemic, that it could go months, if not years, when people say, oh, we're great friends. How long has it been since you talked to them? I don't know, maybe Christmas, something like that, which is really, really sad.
It's so true. Life kind of pushes away some of those socially restful relationships unless you are very systematic about how you're going to go about maintaining them. And, you know, that was the interesting thing with the research, you know, because, for example, my closest friends are around the world from me. So I'm on the East Coast, one's on the West Coast, the other one's in Canada. And although we can't physically be with each other every month or every week, we make a point of doing video chats long before anything ever happened that locked us into our homes. We've been doing this for over 10 years, monthly at least, video chats for an hour where we stay connected. And then when we do have time to meet up at a conference or something at someone's home, we do that, but we still stay connected even when we can't do those in-person visits.
Oh, absolutely. I have friends around the world too. And one of the things I love is sharing a meal with them. Like my friend in Australia will be having breakfast when I'm having dinner, but it's but it's cool because we eat in front of each other. And that may sound weird to some people, but I find it oddly connecting that we're sharing a meal together, even over the video.
And that's the thing, because when you do that and you're able to see the person and respond to their body language and their facial expressions, when you do get face to face with them, it doesn't feel weird. It doesn't feel like, well, I haven't seen you in forever. You know, we've talked on the phone, but we haven't seen each other. So you're having to then break that barrier of kind of getting familiar with them again because you haven't had that experience of their presence in so long. But when you're doing that on a regular basis, when you see that person, it doesn't feel strange because you have been experiencing their presence all along.
Absolutely. And there's ways to connect with young people too. I know some of the family members think it's a little strange. Why not just get electronic books, which is fine. What I've done though is buy two copies of certain children's books I love, send one to one of the family members, the little family members, and we'll read together via video.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
Because I'm an old school. I love paper books. I just love the feel and the idea of turning pages versus an electronic book. I'm not saying anything's wrong with it. This is just me. And I think it's kind of cool to be able to share those moments too, where you can't be snuggled up in the chair together, but you're each turning the page and excited. What's the next picture?
I love that idea.
I think that's really fun. So let's jump ahead. I think we've been, sorry, everyone knows I go down rabbit holes, Dr. Sandra. We've been quite a few places here. I know we haven't talked about the spiritual or the mental yet. Let's choose which one would you like to chat about first?
I would probably say a lot of people deal with the mental rest deficit, especially if you're someone who has ever laid down to go to sleep at night and you're tired. You know, you feel like you should be able to sleep well, but the second your head hits the pillow, you're thinking about everything that you have to do the next day, or you're jotting down a mental to-do list of what to do the following day, or maybe even ruminating over what happened that day. Those are all signs of a mental rest deficit. It's the inability to get your mind to really get to that quiet place. And it seems like almost like an unruly five-year-old. It's jumping. You're telling it to sit here in the chair, and it's kind of like jumping off the walls, going from one thing to the next. And the purpose of mental rest is really to get the mind to be able to focus again. Rather, that's kind of clearing out all of that that cerebral kind of chatter that's going on in the background, or just having a focal point that you bring it back to. So one of the simplest ways of doing that could be using brain dumping. So if you're someone who has a lot of thoughts or to-do list or checklist that's running through your mental space, to have a notepad or a piece of paper at the side of the bed that you jot down that information, because the way the brain works, if you are ruminating over it, it will hold on to that information even at the expense of you sleeping. No matter how much you want to go to sleep, it will hold on to that thought and prevent you from going into the deeper levels of non-REM sleep. Whereas when you write it down, it's almost like giving the brain permission to let it go.
I'm thinking that's so unfair because I can't remember what's on my grocery list half the time, but I can remember all this stuff I don't want to remember, right? seems like that's a little funny hardwiring there. So one of the things that I like to do is journal. And as you said, like write it down. And obviously if I got to remember to talk to so-and-so tomorrow, definitely write it down. I don't need a journal about that. But I love to journal. And what I like to do is write on the right-hand side of the page. I've shared this with my audience before, but write on the right-hand side of the page, leave the left-hand side of the page blank. And the mentor who taught me this was much more systematic than I was. He goes back without a set period of time, me not so much. But I like to go back and read what's on the right-hand side of the page and just write the new date, maybe it's a month, 6 months, whatever, and write what's changed. Good, bad, different, whatever. And I just think that's so fascinating. It just teaches me to let go. This too will change. Good, bad, whatever. It will pass. Mm-hmm. And the other part I like is sometimes with an autoimmune, you might be having a flare. And so you're having like, oh, really bad time. And then somebody recommends something and you try it and you feel much better. I don't know, maybe it's just me, but sometimes I start feeling better and then, I can cheat today. And then pretty soon I forget what was it that I was doing so consistently that made me feel better. And I like being able to go back to my journal and go, oh, that's right. That's what turned the tide. I need to go back and do that. Because I'm one of those that, you know, I try to cheat and then I find out, well, that didn't so well. Have you found that some of your clients like to journal or find other ways like meditation and mindfulness?
Absolutely. I think journaling is kind of a personal thing. There are some people who do extremely well with it. And honestly, there are people like myself who journaling stresses me out. So if I buy a journal and I tell myself I'm going to journal, I actually feel more stressed. Like I have to get something on the page. I think it's the perfectionist parts of me who kind of lean towards that. So I find that tends to be very personal. And so oftentimes when I talk about brain dumping, that's why I tend to say, you know, it could be a post-it note. It could be a piece of paper, anything that you use to write it down, because it's really just the process of writing it on something concrete. And honestly, I have some coaching clients who will say, you know what, I did it on my notepad on my phone, you know, and a part of me cringes when they say that, but it seems to work for them. So they're able to click on the little notepad thing and, you know, verbally say whatever it is that they're ruminating over, and then play it back to themselves the next morning to be able to recall that information. That is not my favorite way of doing it, but apparently it does work for some people. But honestly, as far as the mindfulness, I think that's a huge benefit for someone who has trouble kind of centering their thoughts. For example, if you're someone who you go on vacation with your family and you find that you can't seem to stay focused, it's like you're thinking about work and everything else that's going on in life, but you're not able to stay in the moment, then sometimes having kind of an anchor word where that kind of brings you back and grounds you to that moment can be helpful. So in that situation, maybe if your mind's kind of running around about all these different things, maybe the word family may be the thing that you continue to bring your mind back to. Like I said, like that 5-year-old that won't sit in the chair, well, family would be the chair, and you would continue to bring your mind back to that one spot and sit it back down.
Oh, yes. And I love mindfulness. We've had Tamara Green and David Dashinger from Loving Meditations on, and I find the guided meditations really helpful too. Then I guess I'm not having to think that hard about am I doing it right? I just sort of listen and do what they say. And so I'm not having to pay as deep attention, maybe. I don't know if that's good or not, but I find them absolutely very relaxing and trance-inducing. And speaking of such, not that it's trance-inducing, but we need to take another quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Dr. Sandra some more about this, because I'm just finding this fascinating to understand how our body rests and why we need to do it, understanding these seven formats, because it's critically important. I just know with autoimmune, a lot of people say they never feel rested. So we'll be right back.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the OM Times Experts program. With OM Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations, to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, sorry, I'm rambling, you say, thank you for listening. Join us at ProjectForgive.com, a free non-religious resource on global forgiveness.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And tonight we're here with Dr. Sandra Dalton-Smith, and she's a board-certified internal medicine physician and author of some amazing books. Her latest book is called Sacred Rest. And we've been talking about the different kinds of rest. No, this just isn't napping and sleeping. This is really important. And on your website, restquiz.com, you have a little quiz that people can take to find out how much deficit they have. And I guess maybe I should find a positive way to spin that. How rested they are. How's
that? Well, actually, I actually say the exact same thing. It's a personal assessment to determine what type of tired you are. Because I think, like you said, so many people say, I'm tired, but they haven't quantified it as or make it as specific as possible to say which are the seven that they're actually needing more rest in.
Well, let's say my first thought, you can be deficient in all seven, right?
You can be. So honestly, when I was burned out, and someone who is going through a level of burnout, you know, they've got really have a rest deficit to the point that it is causing negative effects in their life. It's having effects on their relationship, on their health, on their ability to do their job well. That's really what burnout looks like, is the rest deficit has gotten to a point where it is negatively affecting your life. And when you get to that stage, you know, you chances are have more than one rest deficit. You likely have all of them. I had all seven rest deficits when I was going through burnout, different levels. There was, you know, one or two that were more depleted than others, but they're all at a low level. None of them were at their optimal range.
Well, let's dive. I just want to take a little left-hand turn here for a second and talk more about burnout and how that differs from things like I'm feeling anxious all the time, or I'm feeling sad or depressed. What's the definition of burnout? I think in my own mind, I kind of put those all together, and they probably are not all together.
Well, some of the things you mentioned are included in some of the different types of rest deficit. For example, the anxiety or kind of having those jumbled type thoughts, thoughts about whether or not you feel like you belong or kind of what you're worth and all of those things have to do. I mean, some of those relate to the spiritual rest deficit, you know, we were referring to. But with burnout specifically, we're looking at a level of deficit that is now affecting your ability to function. And so, you know, it's not just I feel a little anxious, because that's could be easily kind of input under one of the rest deficits. So you're feeling something, but it's not affecting your ability to function. You're still going to work. You're still having relationships. You're not seeing your relationships starting to kind of crumble and to become less effective. You're not seeing a decline in your performance necessarily at that level. You know, you're still able to press through and you're not having these huge changes. When someone starts going through burnout, they lose that ability to kind of just keep forcing through it. And they start getting to the point where it becomes an issue to the point that they can't continue like that. And probably the easiest way to think about it is if you're someone who's on the verge of burnout, which is where a lot of people are at, you're going to work, but you're going to work without any excitement about the work that you're doing. Your entire time you're at work, you're wanting to leave. You have a hard time concentrating and focusing when you're there. There is no joy while you're there. There's no peace. You feel anxious while at the job, but you feel better when you're leaving the job, but never good enough that you feel like I should quit. So it's almost like this trapped feeling. And that's why for most people, it becomes kind of this vicious cycle, because it looks as if there's no way out. And I think that's probably the worst part of burnout, because for many people, it ends up in things like suicide. You know, when you see someone who is extremely successful, and we see a lot of celebrities who get to this point, extremely successful, they're doing a lot of great work in the world, and it looks like they are really kind of at a point where they're blessing many people's lives, but they themselves don't see the benefit. And that's a burned out life. It's a life where you are no longer consuming the goodness that you're producing into the world.
Wow. Now, how does that differ? I'm still a little confused. To me, if you had said that, I would have said, is that person depressed?
They may have depression as a component of it, because an emotional rest deficit can end up in depression and anxiety. But that person, if they're burned out, is also going to start feeling kind of disconnected, not just from relationships, but disconnected from their own body, because now they're usually have some type of uncomfort or discomfort within their body. They're going to be ignoring it. People with a physical rest deficit, they have pains that they just kind of write off and ignore. The chronic neck pain, back pain, shoulder pain, those tend to come with the stress response. Get kind of put lumped over into the category of, well, you know, that's just part of living. And there's no underlying diagnosis necessarily associated with it.
When you're talking about pain, the thing that interests me, though, is this side note is sometimes people say, well, what's your pain between 0 and 10? I'm like, compared to what? I mean, I might be more or less pain tolerant than the person next to me. It seems kind of, and I've met a lot of people in tremendous pain as you get to talk to them, like, wow. Physical pain, that must be tremendous physical pain, but they're like, oh yeah, but it's been worse or what. I'm just always surprised at how physical pain can be maybe overlooked, not the right word, but coped with.
Well, that's all discomfort. Really, when I think about that, it kind of boils down to everyone's kind of personal resilience level with each of the different types of ways that you can be uncomfortable or pressured. And so pain is a type of discomfort or pressure. And so different people have different tolerance levels. Emotional stress can have different effects on people depending on their own resilience score. And so for someone who has a very high resilience score, they've kind of developed coping mechanisms to allow them to be able to bounce back. That person can go for years under stress and strain that would have maybe sent one person into burnout 10 years prior, and they're still kind of pushing through and not getting to that place until much later. So it does vary person to person and personality types, as well as whether or not someone's kind of a highly sensitive or kind of more in tune to themselves type person.
Now we've got about 12 minutes left, and I know we just touched on spiritual. We didn't go very deep into that. And I want to make sure that we've talked about the physical, somewhat about the mental, social, sensory, and creative, but let's make sure that we don't overlook the spiritual, because I think we just touched on that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think spiritual rest really is different for everyone, depending on what your own personal spiritual beliefs are. But at the core of it, it's really getting to a point where you see yourself as part of something bigger. And however you relate to that, whether you say God or whether you say the universe or however you relate to that, to have some type of relationship where you're seeing yourself as belonging to something and you're not feeling as if you are just kind of out there. And if something happens to you, then it's just not important and you're not contributing. I think we all at the core want to feel like we are contributing to the greater good. And that is a component of that spiritual rest, making sure that you are doing those things and participating in those things that reconnect you.
But it's interesting when I think of spiritual too, and I know your book touches on this, so I want to talk about it, is the connection to something bigger than yourself that creates safety. Those are my words, not yours. But can we talk a little bit more about that idea? Because I know so many people who have, for whatever reason, left the religion of their culture or their birth or family, or that types of things, and have found other ways to be in the spiritual world.
I call it belonging, but safety, I guess, could be used as well. I feel like I think I don't use safety because that means different things for different people, but I tend to look at it more as belonging. Feeling as if they belong to something, something bigger than themselves. So for some people, they find that within a religious body of believers. For other people, they find that in a group of people with common interest. For other people, they may find that just within their own kind of close-knit units. And so it's important to feel that you're belonging to something and that you're accepted, that you're loved, that you are part of something outside of yourself. And that is at the core of what that spiritual rest is, whether you are connecting to that through meditation or you're connecting through that through prayer. It requires you to have some way of connecting outside of yourself to something that you see as bigger.
Fantastic. Thank you. Much belonging is a much better word. I think I put that into my own. As I said, it was my words, not hers. So I knew I'd read it and it had been much more eloquently said than I. Now, we just are down to 9 minutes. I wanted to be sure to tell everyone more. What are your final thoughts that you'd like to share about sacred rest, as well as tell us about your other books and how we can find out more about you and where to get your books? So that's like a nice long thing there, but.
Well, my main website is at ichoosemybestlife.com. That's where they can quickly click the link to get to the rest quiz, as well as find out about some of the different resources. The book Sacred Rest, goes into a lot of detail about the 7 types of rest, as well as including some different ways of getting more rest in each of the 7 areas. And I think for most people, that is the key for them, is really finding out which of the 7 types of rest they're most efficient in. And then instead of trying to just get rest in all 7 areas, focusing their attention on getting the rest in the area of their worst deficit, because that's when you start feeling better. When you start improving the one that's having the most negative effect on your life. And again, that can be taken at restquiz.com.
Oh, absolutely. You can. And what's really cool though, is that so you work on the one that's most deficit and you begin to optimize that, then you can work on the second one.
That's exactly right.
And pretty soon you've got them all covered. So what are some final tips that you would share with people as they're working through this process? How do you keep the momentum going? Like I said, sometimes I find I start feeling better and I begin to think I can cheat.
Well, I think it's just getting a mindset of, this is not like I'm just going to find my rest deficit, fix it one time, and then I'm not going to think about it again. You know, that's what I love about this process. I call it living a well-rested life. It's just making a habit of doing some of these things just naturally within your day, so that you're not having to go on vacation or make a special time for a sabbatical. You're incorporating some of these restful techniques just as part of your day-to-day activities, just kind of incorporating them naturally so that you stay in a place of being well-rested. I call it sometimes just doing a little bit of a body scan. If you're sitting at your desk and you start feeling something hurting, don't try to just push through. Take a moment to do the neck stretches or the shoulder shrugs or whatever you need to do in the moment to relax those muscles so that you're not going into the evening with neck aches and pain because you refuse to take those couple of seconds to just revive yourself.
Well, I like that, because you refused. I love that. How many of us are guilty of that for sure? It's like, oh, I've got a time pressure. Anyway, tell us about your other books and before we have to skedaddle here.
Yeah, so I have two other books. One of them is Come Empty. It's a devotional, specifically working through kind of spiritual and emotional hurts and wounds. And then my very first book was Set Free to Live Free, Breaking Through the 7 Lies Women Tell Themselves. It's more specifically for women who are trying to get through some negative mind blocks, things that are keeping you from being able to really kind of put yourself out there and to live your best life.
Well, we have just a minute or two left, and I'm curious, what are one or two of the biggest mind blocks you find that the majority of women do?
One of the biggest ones really has to do with that perfectionist mindset. I have so many coaching clients who have such great gifts to give and so great information, great talks that they're ready to present and all these ideas. And then when we start talking about them, the very first thing they say is, well, it's not ready yet. I want to make sure that it's perfect and that it's, you know, I've got it as perfect as I can get it. And I think a lot of times we miss opportunities because we're trying to get something perfect when really we just need to get it out there. We need to start somewhere.
I couldn't agree more. Recovering perfectionist myself, who finds that once I get it out there, and even like interviews like this, I learned so much. Once I get it out there, give the knowledge that I have, then people ask me great questions. Or mm-hmm. they'll say something like, so you mean like this? And I'll go, wow, that's a better metaphor. Or that's a better way, you know, that's an interesting addition of looking at it. Or it's just being able to, that was one of my aha moments as a recovering perfectionist, was getting it out there, getting dialogue, getting conversation going, and finding other people's wisdom and how it fills in missing pieces of your puzzle.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because, you know, even if you put it out there imperfectly, you can still work on it. You know, you can still kind of tweak things and improve as you go. I always tell people, let's not strive towards perfection. Instead, let's strive towards excellence. Let's try to put out our most excellent work. And so excellence doesn't have like this finite end. You can continue to progress and to grow.
And my favorite one that I always tell people is nothing extraordinary happens in your comfort zone. And perfectionism is a comfort zone. I mean, it really is. It's a, it's like this wall that you put up that keeps you within your little comfort zone. So nothing extraordinary. So happens there. Anyway, everyone, this is Dr. Sandra Dalton Smith, and she is the author of Sacred Rest and the 7 Types of Rest we've been going through. I've just been so excited to have her because this gave me a whole new way of looking at rest, especially during the pandemic where people say, well, I'm home, but I'm finding a lot of people are not rested even though their home and being deficit in some or all of these parts has been helpful to know. So thank you, Dr. Sandra, for taking the time to share with us that really brought a lot of new insights into our minds here to ponder and to play with. I don't like to use the word work on because that sounds like work, but we'll play with them. And everyone go over to restquiz.com. And your other website, I don't want to mess it up. It's ichoosemybestlife.com.
That's correct.
Okay, yeah. Great. ichoosemybestlife.com. Those will be up over at understandingautoimmune.com. If you're like out power walking or something while you're listening to this, you can always go to understandingautoimmune.com and click on Dr. Sandra's recording, and her bio and everything will be right there for you as well. Have a great week, whatever your adventures. Join me next week for another brand new episode. And reach out if you've got a great guest in mind. That's how Dr. Sandra came to me. And I just love that when people reach out and say, have you talked about this lately? So send me some notes and intrigue me over there at understandingautoimmune.com. Enjoy.
The information provided on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, including the websites understandingautoimmune.com and lifeinterruptedradio.com, plus social media, is for educational purposes only. What you read, hear, and see on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, and its websites and other media outlets is based on experience only. The information should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour. Maybe you don't know I'm also an author. My latest book is for kids. It's Pinky Chenille and the Rainbow Hunters, a winner of a 5-star reader's favorite review. It's perfect for your early reader and a great bedtime story for your young adventurers. Check it out over at pinkychenille.com. That's PinkyChenille.com. See you there.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, sorry, I'm rambling, you say, thank you for listening. Join us at ProjectForgive.com, a free non-religious resource on global forgiveness.